Mars is actually on assignment on this Wednesday, November 29th. A crisp, cool, very clear and sunny day, but it is certainly chilly. Sitting in for Lars is Kerry Clark. Most of you are very, very familiar with his work over the many, many years covering Alabama football, basketball, baseball, softball, all of it. And good friend. I've known him for 40 years. Hello, Kerry Clark. How are things with you?
Things are good. We got two former Alabama Broadcasters of the Year on the show today.
That's, wow, we should have changed the title just for one day.
Just kidding.
Special guest starring, Kerry Clark.
I like this guest starring role, man. There's a lot to be said for a veteran pinch hitter.
Absolutely. You're the Rusty Staub of radio.
Correct.
Do you remember him?
I do. I met.
Yeah, and many others. He played for a lot of teams, but only a few people like you and I are going to remember Rusty Staub and start a show with him. We got many directions. A lot of food on our lunch plate here on this Wednesday. I'm going to start with Alabama basketball. Kerry, I don't know. I'm throwing you under the bus here. I don't know if you went last night or not.
I did.
Did you see the Clemson loss?
I was there in person, sir.
Brian Passink will be along. Of course, he was literally courtside along with Kerry Clark. And we'll talk in depth with him about it at 12:15. But just your overall thoughts. And I'll tell you a quick story. I was meeting with President of the Council, Kip Tyner, yesterday afternoon at the Hampton. And lo and behold, that's where Clemson was staying. And one of their coaches was walking out. I don't know if he was going for a run or something. It was right around 2 o'clock. And he walked by and Kip said, "Hey, y'all go easy on us tonight." And he said, "Defense." Well, guess what? They played a lot more than Alabama did, and I don't think you have to be a Phi Beta Kappa of basketball to figure it out. And this is going to be a season-long issue if Alabama doesn't get it corrected. But they've got to play defense, Kerry.
Yes, and Nate Oates has harped on it since day one. The players are now starting to harp on it. Mark Sears said after the game last night, after leading Alabama in scoring with 23 points, that we're going to keep working on this defense till we get it fixed, no matter how long it takes. Well, you know, the last time I guested with you guys, we talked about that murderer's row that starts after the Arkansas State game next Monday. That murderer's row that includes Purdue, Creighton, and Arkansas. It's staring us in the face right now. And if the defense doesn't dramatically improve, they're liable to get swept in those three games.
It could happen.
Or go 1-2 at best.
Those are all three NCAA teams. Even this early, I think I can tell you that.
I think you're correct.
But I learned this mainly from Wimp back when he took over for CM. And this is basketball 101. Sometimes you really can't control where the ball's going to go when you're shooting it. You're just off. You go 0-for-9 from three-point range, as Alabama did to start the game. But the one consistent that you can always have is defense. And goodness knows, Kerry, we saw it from Wimp. But did this team come in with the transfers coming in? Was it too much offense and not enough defense? Or is it just something that literally can be corrected?
I think it can be corrected, but I didn't think it would take this long. Teams are seeing things on tape that they can exploit. And they're throwing the ball inside. They're blowing by people on the dribble drive. They're finding ways to get open and drain threes. And Alabama's got to get it fixed. The defense was actually pretty good in the first half last night.
Yeah.
Clemson got 0.92 per possession. But in the second half, they got 1.64. And as Oates emphatically said in his post-game presser, you stretch that out through a game, that'd be one of the worst defensive performances in basketball history. 1.64 a possession. So if they could have replicated the first half defensive effort in the final 20 minutes, they would have gotten a win and not had their 19-game Coleman Coliseum winning streak snap. But they didn't, and they got outplayed on both ends in the second half, and they took that L, and you hope they can learn from it. Oates also made the point during his press conference that a loss like that doesn't hurt you as much in basketball as, say, a Texas loss could in football, because you play a lot more games, but you still got to get it fixed with this murderer's row coming up. And the thing is, they're going to play Arkansas State Monday night at home at 7 o'clock, who is coached by Nate Oates' disciple Brian Hodgson. So that one won't even be as easy as it may sound, because he knows everything that Oates does.
We'll talk with Brian at length about this, but just one more question, because Jay Williams made a comment on television as the color analyst about the crowd and perhaps a lack of enthusiasm. Did you notice that?
For spurts, yeah. And Oates acknowledged it too. He said that the Alabama team needs to give people something to cheer about. But I'd like to add one caveat, Matt. When you schedule a game at 8:30 p.m. on a work and school night, what kind of crowd do you really think you're going to have?
They're really not thinking about that. They're thinking about the ACC-SEC challenge. And
TV money is what they're thinking about.
Exactly. That's what it is.
It's all about the Benjamins, brother.
All right. Here's one I don't think that I saw on my radar at all. Bobby Petrino's going back to Arkansas as the OC. Now, is this an effort and maybe behind the scenes? Arkansas told Sam Pittman, it's kind of you do this or you.
I think you're right. And that happens more often than people think regarding athletic directors instructing head coaches what they need to do to keep their jobs.
Didn't it happen with Texas A&M, don't you think?
I do.
Is that okay? Good, I do. Continue. I interrupted you.
No, but what you're saying is true. I think that Sam Pittman was told the exact same thing that Jimbo Fisher was told regarding upgrading the offense. And certainly Bobby Petrino knows Fayetteville. He definitely knows the motorcycle back roads, Chortle. But he knows Fayetteville, and he knows the state of Arkansas. He knows the culture, the community. What he doesn't know is the current group of players, but that's why we have spring practice. And they didn't make a bowl, so he won't be able to get them know. He won't be able to get to know them during a bowl practice, but he certainly will for the three allowed weeks of spring training, starting in late March, early April. And it's a really interesting move. I thought Bobby Petrino's next move was going to be getting back to head coaching, but instead, it's I guess you'd call it a lateral move. Two middle-of-the-road programs. You go from being an OC at one to an OC at the other. You go from oil money to Tyson and Walmart money. So, he's certainly an innovative play caller and a good quarterback developer. And I think it's a wonderful hire by Sam Pittman. But as you intimated, I think it was a required hire.
Yeah. I do, too. But it's just very interesting that this guy continues to bounce around. And I, too, thought he might end up Houston's now open. I really thought a head coaching slot. But then I stopped. I gave pause for cause, Kerry. And that's what I was thinking, did A&M's offense really look that much better this year? Of course, they had
not in chairs.
No, it was not. Not what a lot of people, especially Aggie fans, expected. But, of course, they were playing musical chairs at quarterback, too. And I've never seen an offense that can be real, real, real effective when you're not only alternating quarterbacks, but quarterbacks with totally different styles. So that's what happened with Texas A&M. And then the huge story throughout this week is what's going to happen Friday and then again on Saturday with these conference championship games. And we're going to get into that in great detail a little later in the show. But right now, let's take our first break of the show. When we come back, we will be joined by Brian Passink, the long-term Alabama player at Tuscaloosa. And he is the color analyst, along with Chris Stewart for the University of Alabama Network, Crimson Tide Sports Network. And we'll pick it up with Brian in just a minute. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Lots of sunshine this afternoon. The high today, 57. Mostly fair tonight, the low 32. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. Rain moving in tomorrow night, the high 61. Friday, cloudy with occasional rain, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 55 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plane. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is indeed. And we welcome in Brian Passink, color analyst, former Alabama Crimson Tider himself, as we talk some Bama hoops. Hey, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I sure did. It was a great Thanksgiving, and got down to the beach for the Emerald Coast Classic. It was my first time down there for the tournament. Obviously, I've been to the Destin area many times, although not enough. It was beautiful. The tide looked good on Saturday, not so much on Friday, but it was a great trip and a great Thanksgiving. I hope you guys had a nice Thanksgiving as well.
I did, and I've worked that tournament. It's a very interesting tournament, to say the very least, just to, because of its surroundings at the beach, and then it's not the world's largest arena either. But it is cool, and I'm glad you had a great Thanksgiving. Before we get to basketball, I'm asking everybody this week where they were and what they did physically and mentally on 4th and 31. What was Brian Passink doing?
Well, Matt, I'm glad you asked, because I like to think it was an interesting story. So I was multitasking during the game, during the Alabama-Oregon basketball game, due to contractual obligations. I was I was working that game, and obviously nowhere I'd rather be than calling an Alabama basketball game. Not ideal situation when the football game, the Iron Bowl, kicks off at 2:30 and the basketball game tips off at 3. But hey, that's how it goes sometimes. But so I had one eye on the computer screen in front of me that had the Iron Bowl on, and one eye on the game. But the basketball game ended the beginning of the fourth quarter, around the beginning of the fourth quarter of the Iron Bowl. So I was able to focus in on the fourth quarter, and I was sitting at our broadcast position for 4th and 31, and it was probably, and I didn't realize this because I was very, you know, I was obviously focused in on the football game, but I looked up and it was right before the Ohio State Santa Clara championship game of the Emerald Coast Classic. It was about, they were about to introduce starting lineups for that, but I was right by the Ohio State bench. 4th and 31 happens. Of course, I jump up and scream like a crazy person. Standing in front of me, like 2 feet in front of me, is Chris Holtman, the Ohio State head basketball coach, who's getting ready for the championship game. And he looks at me, and I didn't know if he was going to punch me or just tell, you know, call a security guard. But he says, "What happened?" And I told him. I turned around my iPad and showed him the replay. And right before tip of the Ohio State game, he's like, "Oh my gosh, that's unbelievable!" And then started saying, "But that hurts us. That hurts Ohio State." So we're having this 4th and 31 conversation, me and the head basketball coach of Ohio State, right before their tip against Santa Clara. It was hilarious.
Brian, hey, this is Kerry. Glad you could join us today. I wanted to ask you what exactly is going on or not going on with Alabama's basketball defense this season.
Well, it's not great right now. That is pretty obvious. And I'm not sure that it's an easy fix, but I think it is fixable. This is a group that is so good on the offensive end. I mean, and still, even after last night, is the number one rated offense in college basketball. But the question you asked is a great one, and I think it's will determine how good this season will be, and that's what they do on the defensive end, down to number 88 in America in defense, quite the disparity. So this team right now has not gelled on the defensive end. It has been a focus in practice. They have been good at times, inconsistent, more so than anything. I think the common denominator with the games that Alabama has lost, and that was Ohio State and Clemson last night, were good, tough, physical, veteran teams that have been together a while and shot the lights out. Ohio State, I think they made their first 5 threes of the second half, and were some of them open? Yes. Some of them were well contested. To their credit, they made them. Clemson goes 8-for-11 from three in the second half. They had a run, I think a 13-3 run when Alabama was up 7. The crowd was in the game, and it felt like this team was about to be in a really good position to win the game. They go on a 13-0 run in a minute and a half. The majority of that was the three ball. They're a good team. I knew it would be a tough game, and Alabama would have to play well. Missed too many makeable twos within 2 or 3 feet. I think the numbers were, I heard them last night. They were not good. Well below 50% for at-the-rim twos. That's not good enough, especially when your opponent shoots 72% from the three-point line in the second half. So I thought it was a combination of Clemson was really good. I thought they would be a tough team. They played really well. They shot it really well. And Alabama is not near where they need to be on the defensive end right now. And they're going to have to get that fixed, and it's going to have to happen quickly because the schedule gets ridiculously tough here in the next couple of weeks with what's ahead. So I know that'll be the focus. I have great trust in Nate Oates and his coaches to get this area that they're struggling in going in the right direction.
Our guest is Brian Passink, color analyst on the Crimson Tide Sports Network. Is it as simple as getting the transfers and signees to buy into the defensive system when likely they came from programs where they were given the ball?
I don't know if that's it necessarily. I mean, I think it's as simple as, all right, you go back 3 years ago, Herb Jones is a leader on the team, SEC player of the year, best defensive player in college basketball. I think he's one of the top two or three best defensive players on the planet right now in the NBA. You had really good individual defenders on that team. Last year, you had Noah Clowney, who wasn't Herb Jones, but kind of cut out of the same mold as Herb Jones on the defensive end. Brandon Miller, an underrated defender, did a really good job on that end of the floor. You had Charles Bediako, who his presence is missed as much as anybody who left the program, because what this team desperately needed last night, and even though the three ball hurt them, rim protection is not where it needs to be. And you thought you were going to have Charles Bediako. He was one of the surprises. I think they anticipated him coming back, and he didn't. And that left a hole around the basket, and this team has not been nearly as good at the rim defending than this program has been in recent years. And then, all of a sudden, you're scrambling around. You're trying to come off help because you don't have a rim protector, and maybe that opens things up on the perimeter. But I think the desire to get better is there. I don't see a bunch of guys who are checking out the stat sheet and playing selfish basketball and are only concerned with offense. I see them wanting to get better in this area. And I think they will. It's just going to be hard with the schedule that lies ahead to see a huge improvement, because the competition level is going to really ramp up with Purdue, number one team in the country, Creighton, one of the top, handful of teams in the country, that went on the road. And then you play the number one and number two team in the country. Right now, Arizona is number two. So you go to Phoenix. So that's all coming up in the next few weeks. So it's not going to be easy. But I know that every one of these guys, at least the ones that I've been around, they want to be better on the defensive end. It is a focus of the coaches' staff. It's also, I think, being received as by these players is an area that they're not pushing back. They know they want to be good. They want to win. They don't want nights to happen like last night at home, where you end a 19 game home win streak because of the inability to get stops in the second half. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but I would be shocked if we're talking in the next month or two and we don't see drastic improvement on that end of the floor.
Yeah, Brian, this is not really a defensive question. This is more of a personnel question. Out of the blue today, true freshman wing Chris Parker goes on Twitter and writes soon, just a one-word tweet, soon. Mm-hmm. It could that be an indication that the red shirt is coming off of him?
Well, it could be. Or it could be that he's about to eat lunch and he's saying he's going to eat soon. I mean, like, who knows what people are putting on Twitter.
Valid point.
I've learned this, having teenagers. I'm not reading anything into what they put on social media, so I have no idea. It could be, but I'm not going to try to interpret.
Well,
it
those of us that cover the team on a regular basis, we call ourselves mediates, but we kind of narrowed it down to either the red shirt's coming off or he's going to the portal. Something's about to happen. I really don't think he was talking about, man, I can't wait to get to City Cafe.
Well, I tell you what, I would love to have some City Cafe. I may tweet that.
Okay.
I'm going to eat some City Cafe soon. No, I don't know.
Friday is Stuffed Eggs Day, just to let you know.
Oh, man. I love it. I'm glad I didn't have social media when I was after a loss, or I didn't play or something. I might have tried. I don't know what I would have said. But, yeah, I don't know.
Hey, how is the transition of the newer players coming in?
Well, I think it's good. I think they're all those guys fit in really well with a mindset, with their skill set. They seem to be well liked and be about the right things in terms of wanting to be good and being unselfish. I mean, you know, I see what this team does on the offensive end, and I think it's different than a couple of years ago. And I'm not, I don't throw anybody under the bus, but, there were times that I thought, some guys wanted to get their points and put themselves in a position to get to the next level. And I'm not saying that all these guys don't have aspirations to play at the next level. If you're in Alabama and you're at a program that is trying to win championships, where this program has won and is trying to win those, you're attracting players that want to play professional basketball and play in the NBA. So yes, they have aspirations to do that, but I don't think it's come at the expense of not making the extra pass and not being for your teammates. That's one thing Nate Oates said a week or so ago, that one of the things that has impressed him about this team is they're for each other. And I think that is so important, and especially important in times like this, where you have a couple of tough losses, losing 2 out of 3, games that you expect as a top 25 team that you would win at home, and then in a neutral site against Ohio State. So, I don't think there's going to be anything other than guys going to work, watching film, meeting with coaches, practicing hard, trying to get better in areas that they're struggling in. And it's why Nate Oates, the last 2 years, has played the nation's number one strength of schedule, and maybe that this year with what's ahead. I wouldn't be surprised with how good the SEC is and with this non-conference schedule. If Alabama for the third straight year doesn't have the nation's toughest strength of schedule. So, when you have a mindset like that, an attitude that wants to get better and is about the team, then these moments are learning opportunities, and you get better from it, you grow from it, and hopefully a month or two from now, or even a week from now, we'll see growth and improvement, and that these lessons were learned and they've gotten better from it as a result.
Brian, you already know this, but just to share it with the listeners, there were about a half dozen NBA scouts at the game last night, and one of them was former Alabama player Keith Askins, who's with the Miami Heat and has been since he left Tuscaloosa. And the other one was a guy that I didn't get his name, from the Washington Wizards. And I was kind of trying to eavesdrop on their conversations, but I actually heard them talking about on some of those plays where Grant Nelson didn't finish at the rim, that he needed to add some strength. And I know that everybody is hoping to get an extra year out of him because he technically can play here 2 years if he chooses to. I just wonder, is it realistic to hope for that, or is he just pretty much going to be a one and done here in Tuscaloosa?
Well, I mean, I don't know the answer. I think I would be surprised. But I think also how the rest of the year plays out will determine that. He has gotten stronger. Last night, he wasn't able to finish like he normally does. Now, Clemson is unique with the physicality. And they got a bunch of old, big, strong, 240, 250-pound post players. And in Alabama, that affected them. But, you know, in the next couple of weeks, if Grant Nelson is shooting 75% in those shots, in some of those looks that he got where he did not shoot a high percentage, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Those are shots he normally makes, and these are misses that Alabama normally connects on. And I think, yes, the size and physicality affected them, but also I think they're very capable of playing through contact and playing physical teams and playing in a game where the officials let them play. And that's fine. They let both teams play. I think in this case it was the Clemson's advantage because of how physical they are. But, again, I think you learn from it. I think the next time you're faced with that, I think the result may be very different, at least that would be my hope, and wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
Brian, always appreciate your time. I know you'll be generous with it again next week. We appreciate that as well. Just a note, I did a couple of the Mountain Brook games last week, I guess, leading up to Thanksgiving. And I always love watching Sarah play. She just plays so hard. She has such a high basketball IQ. She did make one move down underneath the basket that I don't even think you could make in your prime.
Well, I know she's a much, much better ball handler than me, and she's much more unselfish on the court. So I enjoyed it. It was great seeing you, and it's great for the girls to have a big-time voice and broadcaster like Matt Coulter on the call. So we enjoyed having you.
You're so kind. Thank you, Brian. Have a great remainder of the week, and roll tide against Georgia.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all having me. Roll tide.
Speaking of the Bulldogs, Kerry Clark and I are going to discuss that, among other topics, as we continue on this Wednesday edition of Big Noon Sports.
I hear Lolly Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
It is Big Noon Sports. Kerry Clark is sitting in for Lars, taking the day off. Matt Coulter, along with Noah Haynes, who's back at the controls, Tide 100.9. We just keep talking about it, and only the games will sort things out. But the power rankings did come out. The playoff rankings did come out, and it figured exactly as I thought. There was just movement that Ohio State dropped back to number 6, and I'll start with this question that we can bat around for a minute. Even though Ohio State has no chance of winning the Big Ten, I think they're in a pretty good spot.
I think they're a placeholder, and they are not going to be considered for the playoffs regardless of what happens Saturday and Friday.
So even if,
placeholder.
Yeah, but Washington and Oregon play. Is the loser of that game not going to drop below Ohio State?
Well, below Ohio State, I don't know, but they will drop below four. The loser of that game will drop out of the top four.
Yes, no question.
I just received a great text from my nephew who considers himself a predictionist. And he says, here's my top six after Saturday. 1 Michigan, 2 Texas, 3 Alabama, 4 Oregon, 5 FSU, and 6 Georgia. Now, that's one man's speculation, and he's a confirmed Bammer graduate of here. And, but it's, what he texted me is not out of the realm of possibility. And you know what I like about that, Matt? If it ends up being 2 Texas and 3 Alabama, Sugar Bowl.
How interesting.
If it ends up that way. Now, I could see Bama as the four and getting sent to Pasadena. I think that's probably more likely. But I like my nephew Joey's projections here because I'm all about a trip to Commander's Palace for a nice dinner.
Can Florida State drop with winning?
Out of the top four, they can. Yes. Yep. I think that quarterback injury is going to haunt them. And especially if they don't win impressively. But my gut says that Louisville's going to beat them straight up. They won't be a factor.
I don't think you're alone there either.
Well, I think other people agree with that. But, look, I didn't think that Kentucky would beat them. So, them being Louisville. So, hopefully, they'll use that as a way to get a mat on and
exactly.
Just take it out on FSU. I mean, that's how I'd coach it if I was in charge.
What's the best scenario for Washington versus Oregon for Alabama?
I think it's Oregon winning.
Well,
but I really don't think it matters, Matt, because I think the loser's out regardless.
Really? So Washington would not drop if Washington were to lose, and both those teams would have one loss, then Washington would drop below Alabama?
If Alabama beats Georgia.
Yeah.
It all is contingent on that. And I'm not sure why everybody's assuming that's going to happen.
No, I...
Georgia's favored for a reason.
And it's wrong.
Now, does my gut say Alabama can and maybe will beat them? Yeah, but I mean, I've got 2 degrees from here. You know, I'm not the guy to ask. What the realist in me says that Georgia could go out there and win that game by 10 points easily. Yeah. And everybody will just be saying, okay, Bama, enjoy the peach or cotton. So it's all contingent on Alabama beating Georgia. If that doesn't happen, none of the rest of it matters to Bama Nation.
No, it really doesn't. And I think, and we've been doing this for a couple of weeks now, ever since Alabama clinched the West, really.
Yes.
And, you know, we knew it was going to be Alabama, Georgia. I don't know if the Alabama fans or folks are looking past that and assuming that Alabama's going to beat Georgia.
It sounds to me like most of them are.
That's the real deep dive here.
That's a big mistake because this is a really good Georgia team that's just improved as the season went on. You know, the Carson Beck I saw before the fourth quarter of the Auburn game was a very beatable quarterback. But right now, he looks like a stud. And that's not to say Milroe doesn't either, but – this is two of the better quarterbacks in the country that are going to be doing battle in the Mercedes Dome Saturday.
If you were to choose a quarterback, Lars drops this question on me, okay?
Okay. Just
if
now?
If you were to select, no, he's been doing it for like a week or so.
Okay.
And I keep giving him, first I hesitated, then I gave him my real answer.
All right.
Up to you. If you could pick between starting quarterbacks here to lead your team, you know, the Clark Commanders, who would you pick?
Between the SEC championship game quarterbacks?
Between Milroe and Beck.
Milroe.
Because of his legs.
Because of his legs and his uncanny ability to make plays. I mean, does Carson Beck have a Daniel Moore painting coming?
No.
Not yet. I'm not saying he won't. He could be having one
could
later.
From this,
but right
from
now,
this Saturday.
Daniel has already announced a painting that's simply called 4th and 31.
And I see now where you can order T-shirts for 4th and 31. Have you seen that, Kerry?
No, but I'll probably need to ride down to Academy after we're done.
Well, they're out.
Mine would say Isaiah 4:31 if I could have it made.
Wow. Great biblical reference. Cool. And I would expect that from Kerry Clark. So you hold your faith close, as I hope that I do as well. All right. Just got a note from a longtime Alabama reporter and broadcaster. Mick Gillespie will join us at the top of the hour. Kerry and I will be right back after this break.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
The 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
Lots of sunshine this afternoon. The high today 57. Mostly fair tonight. The low 32. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. Rain moving in tomorrow night. The high 61. Friday, cloudy with occasional rain. The high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 56 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
It is indeed. Matt, Lars is off today. Kerry Clark in his stead. Kerry, we did our post-game show on 95.3 The Bear, Tide 100.9 and 1230 WTBC Saturday afternoon, really evening. And I don't know if I just ask you the same question that I just posed to Brian Passink, and that's what describe the moment that 4th and 31 occurred. What was Kerry Clark doing?
I was in front of my TV because I was writing a game story as the game progressed. You know, you write it as it goes on, and then you fill in quotations and stats later. And that's just the method of the madness. And I had pretty much given up because 4th and 31 is, as statistics show, 99.9% in favor of the defense. And then I remembered 2nd and 26. And then I remembered the disaster in the pasture 2 years ago that Bryce Young led the comeback on. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try to keep an open mind on this play. Anything can happen. And my wife, Patty, had given up at the beginning of the fourth quarter. She could just tell in her heart that Auburn was going to win. And, you know, she didn't want to subject herself to that agony. So she was in the bedroom watching, you know, Christmas movies on Hallmark or something. So I'm in there by myself. The dog's even in the bedroom with her. Dog is named Julio, by the way. I'm sure you can figure out that nomenclature. But little Shih Tzu, 14 years old, loves mom and dad. But anyway, so I'm sitting there by myself, and all of a sudden, my wife hears me screaming at the top of my lungs the word touchdown that the neighbors on both sides probably heard really loud. Three times in a row, she scurries into the room. And honestly, Matt, nearly the exact same thing happened 2 years ago on the Ja'Cory Brooks catch, to put it in overtime. She was in the bedroom then. She had given up the ghost. But she heard me screaming, and she came. So we really had a replication at Clark Manor of 2021. But I, you know, except that year it was more clapping, and this year it was more screaming. The word touchdown very loudly three times in a row. And it was incredible. I mean, it was one of those moments that you'll never forget.
Yeah. Geez. Isn't that just what Alabama Auburn football games are all about?
They're blowouts there at especially. Bryant Denny.
Yeah.
The last close game at Bryant Denny was the Blake Sims-Nick Marshall shootout in 2014. And there at the very end, that wasn't close. It ended up being a two-score game. But And then, of course, the Cam back in 2010. But majority of the time, the Iron Bowls in Bryant-Denny are blowouts in favor of Alabama. And the majority of the time, the Iron Bowls in Jordan-Hare are classics that go down to the end of the fourth quarter. It's weird. I made the statement about voodoo turning into doo-doo and all that, but the voodoo did keep the game close.
Yeah.
And because Alabama should have blown them out. If they don't throw that makeup call flag on Kendrick Law's touchdown to make it 14-0, that game would have been a blowout, and there is no 4th-and-31. Let's just be honest about it. That was a makeup call.
Yeah, it was.
It was a makeup call. It was because they missed a face mask on a kickoff return, which they did miss.
Big time.
But so let's do – and it's no coincidence, Matt, that's the same crew that called last year's game in Knoxville. No coincidence.
Do you think they're just mistake prone? Well, you're not one of these people that believe they're actually pulling for a team, do you?
I don't believe that. I just think they're bad officials. Because the Auburn fans would tell you that Alabama got all the calls Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're still telling people that, anybody that'll listen.
When both teams are yelling it, they at least got the equal amount wrong for both teams, which I think was the case.
Well, I would not disagree with you there, sir. But it's still a bad crew. It's the Greg Autry crew.
Well,
it's unfortunate that head coaches can no longer strike crews. As I guarantee you, if what happened to Alabama in Knoxville last year happened under Paul Bryant, Greg Autry would never call another Bama game his entire life, or the life of Coach Bryant's career here. But you can't do that these days. Things have changed, and we're stuck. And whenever Alabama gets that crew, fans cringe, and rightly so.
What is it about Auburn, Jordan-Hare Stadium? I mean, you know, our partner Mark McGriff says, and you just mentioned the word, says it's voodoo. It's buried on some, you know, it's on top of some burial ground or something like that.
It seems to only work in big games like Georgia or Alabama, though, Matt.
Yeah.
The prayer in Jordan-Hare was against Georgia. The scare in Jordan-Hare for Georgia this year, that Brock Bowers led the fourth quarter comeback, that game should have never been that close. That was the day that Carson Beck came of age, by the way, that fourth quarter in Jordan-Hare Stadium against Auburn. But then you have New Mexico State going in there and lining up and whipping their behinds for 60 minutes. So the voodoo is not eternal. It's just it just flexes its ugly head in certain big games. And they just play to their home crowd. They play their hearts out. And Freeze, to his credit, and it should be this way when you work 2 weeks on the same team, cost you a win against New Mexico State, but that's another story. But he worked 2 weeks on Alabama, and for that reason, he was able to keep the game closer with a little bit of help from the officials. But, and we didn't even mention the catch by Jermaine Burton that was a catch that was ruled not a catch. That was freaking ridiculous. But again, Auburn has some things to complain about as well. Just a bad crew. And that is, but having a bad crew enters into the voodoo. There were times there that Gus Malzahn did things where he literally outcoached Nick Saban at the end of ball games, putting a punter in the offensive huddle, putting a return man back on a missed field goal, things like that. But it doesn't happen every game. It's only for certain big games. It's not consistent voodoo.
I would throw an LSU game in there or two.
I would agree. That would count that as a big game.
Yeah, oh, huge, yeah. I would agree, too. But
a named conference opponent.
That year when Jamie Howard kept throwing the football and throwing the football and throwing the football and just saying, okay, here return this one, here return that one. Man, there was something in the water in the LSU locker.
Well, LSU could have handed off and won that game.
Yes.
They chose not to.
They chose not to. All right. First hour's in the books. We'll begin the second half here in just a moment with the broadcaster at Mick. That's Mick Gillespie. He will join us on the other side of the break, and we'll talk Alabama, Georgia, and playoff potential on Big Noon Sports.
Tuscaloosa and W265CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
Well, there's been much debate about whether Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers could make an improbable return from his week one Achilles injury and play this season. Rodgers has mentioned mid-December as a target date to get back on the field, and now the first domino needed to fall to that end has just occurred with the Jets opening the 21-day practice window for Rodgers. He now has 3 weeks to be activated, otherwise he would be ineligible to play this season. 15-year receiver and longtime Eagle DeSean Jackson announced his retirement today. He'll ceremoniously retire as an Eagle on Friday and then be Philly's honorary captain for Sunday's game against the 49ers. Broncos safety Kareem Jackson is meeting with Commissioner Roger Goodell today to seek clarity on player safety rules that have led to him being suspended for 6 games this year. And NFL Media reports Texans left guard Titus Howard is out for the season.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Big Noon Sports, Lars is off, Kerry Clark filling in admirably. And also joining us is Mick Gillespie. And Mick, we appreciate it. Did you have a good Thanksgiving, family and friends? All good?
Yeah, man. We spent it with the Baron Huber and his family, the Huber family at the Floribama ball place.
Oh, great. Wow.
Good. Good. That's traditional.
How was that food?
It was covered dish. There were probably like 800 dishes in there, and then the Floribama people made the turkey. It was great.
Nice.
All right. Hey, it's Thanksgiving. Spend it with family and friends. Floribama or at your own home. That's cool. All right. I'm asking everybody we talked to this week where you were, what you did on 4th and 31. So Mick, you've got the ball.
All right, so Bama Tailgates, my YouTube channel. I do a post-game show right after the game. I was on there ready to basically eat crow because I thought Bama was going to take care of business. And in my home studio, I'm see what happens, and I still can't believe it, honestly.
Did you jump up? Did you yell?
I cussed and screamed. I cussed and screamed, and I just kept yelling, you know, I can't believe that, but I added some colorful language in there. And then, being the partner that I am, Chad Anderson, who does the show with me, I didn't tell him that I started the feed, and he was a little bit behind me. So he's on camera screaming. we caught it live, so that was pretty funny.
Hey, Mick, this is Kerry. I want to read you a tweet that, and you may have seen it, that just now came out from whoever handles social media for CBS Sports. And it says, and I'm going to read this word to word, the Crimson Tide need to win and move up 4 spots in the rankings. Beating Georgia would take care of 3 spots. Alabama would go past the Bulldogs, the Pac-12 loser, and Ohio State. A loss then by Texas, Florida State, or Michigan will be required to get the Tide to the top 4. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, you know, honestly, I just put a video out talking about this, and I'll reiterate it. I feel like the committee has set Alabama up not to make it. You know, they've beaten more, you know, playoff teams than anybody else that's up there in that mix. They've taken care of their business. They've beaten more ranked teams, you know, anything that you could ask for, they've done. And this committee, week after week, has seen an opportunity to push them back far enough where you're right. Like, even a win over Georgia, it's going to take a lot of politicking to get them in there. You know, the issue is just like last year, they're one of the 4 best teams today, you know, not even before this game against Georgia. And if they were wearing an Oregon uniform or Washington or Florida State, be a different story. But, you know, Bama fatigue's real, and we're going to need chaos to make sure that we get in. So I'm not disagreeing. I just think that the conference needs to get in there and do something about it. It's a joke to have Oregon ranked so high. You know, like they have a big, what's their best win? Against Utah? They're Utah business. I mean, come on. You know, and so when I saw that and the fact that Ohio State has a 0% chance of making it, they're not making it. And for the committee to put them ahead of Texas and Alabama is complete crap to me.
Well, now they can make it, though.
Well,
not realistically.
They're not going to make it. No, I mean, look, the Ohio State has a 0% chance. You got to be you're going to have to be a conference winner this year to get in.
Correct.
Unless everybody loses, you know, but they don't have a chance. And they put them up there, and now we're going to see the same thing with the Pac-12 because those teams are moving to the Big Ten. Where every year we got to pretend that these teams are good. They haven't won a championship since 2014. And then when did they win their last championship before that? You know, this has been the SEC Invitational. And the thing that really bothers me, two things. First off, they want you to go out and schedule real opponents. Georgia didn't do that. You know, Oregon didn't do that. Alabama did.
Georgia lost Oklahoma, though. I feel compelled to mention that.
But they didn't play anybody this year. It looks like Ball State. You know, Alabama's playing Texas, and they lost the game, and they've won every game since. They also lost the two of the top three players in the country last year to the NFL. And they've come back, and they've replaced those guys. But it takes time. But the talent is in the SEC, and it's in Tuscaloosa. And if they beat Georgia, then they better get in. That's all I'm saying.
You know, guys, this is open for discussion and it may be wild. This will never happen. But what if Vegas took all of these games, Alabama versus so-and-so, Alabama versus Oregon, Alabama versus Michigan, and they looked at the line that Vegas would establish for betting, would Alabama be, and then they did that to all the other teams too. Vegas decides the four. Who would it be?
I mean, Alabama would be one of the top four teams.
Huh?
I mean, how many teams are they going to be underdog to? Georgia? And then when they beat Georgia on Saturday, then what? Then who are they going to be underdog to? Michigan? I mean, come on. Look how bad that conference is such a joke. I mean, look at Iowa playing in that championship game. The over-under on them scoring in each half is like half a point. Can you imagine a team that's that bad being in an SEC championship game ever? Let me ask you guys this. You've been around it as long as I have. Who is the worst team that the SEC's ever had in their championship game?
Missouri.
And how do they compare? And how do they compare to that? You're right. And they would have beat Iowa probably by three touchdowns.
I don't disagree with that. Let me ask you another question, Mick. Another tweet I just saw. This is from a local guy here. If Bama does get screwed, and if Texas finishes like fifth, how cool would it be for a Bama-Texas rematch in the Cotton Bowl?
Well,
I don't want to talk about it or think about it, yeah. But if there is a double screwing, then it would be almost a sense of relief to see Bama get another shot at Texas.
I mean, I don't know. I think that if Alabama gets screwed over by the college football playoff committee, which they're setting up for, it's going to be hard for Coach Saban to get these guys to stick around. And he did a good job of that last year.
Incredible.
But it was Bryce Young, too, you know, willing to play. You know, eventually that's not going to happen. So hopefully that's not a scenario, but if it is, the Sunday we're talking about, you know, the Sugar Bowl against Texas, that'd be a lot better than playing Tulane.
Yeah. I tell you who's really lobbying hard for Alabama is the Peach Bowl right now.
Who would be in there?
The latest one I saw was Tulane, which would be it wouldn't matter who left for Alabama if that's the opponent.
Yeah, and it's their Super Bowl, and everybody on our teams would be like they were when we played 2008 against Utah.
I was there. You
know? So was I. Yeah, they
highlight of the trip was eating at Commander's Palace.
Barron, who we spent Thanksgiving with, remember he had that big kickoff return, rumble in the bayou, he calls it.
Yep.
You know, I saw a tweet that suggested they ought to rematch Auburn and New Mexico State in a bowl game.
That'd be pretty funny, really.
Yeah, but what I really wanted, and I don't think it's going to happen, is that now bowl-eligible Jacksonville State would come to Birmingham and play Auburn.
Boy, that'd be great.
Yeah,
that
would be fun.
I would too.
That'd be really fun.
It would be. We need to talk about Alabama-Georgia because, Mick, as we talk about playoff possibilities, nothing happens if Alabama doesn't win. A lot can happen if they do. But before we go to break, I just want to get a quick comment from you. Bobby Petrino to Arkansas. Mick Gillespie's thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they talk about full circle, right? Not quite full circle, but I don't know. I'm pretty forgiving, and how embarrassing that was for him. You know, for that guy to want to go back there tells you something about him. People aren't perfect, you know, and certainly he's not. But think of all of our mistakes were as public as his was, you know.
Truth.
I just kind of felt like, as I got all the texts yesterday of him and, you know, the neck brace, it looked like he was part of a wrestling pay-per-view. Ooh. I thought, well, you know, he's going to get an opportunity, it looks like, to fix a wrong. And as long as they don't beat Alabama, hey, more power to him.
Mick, can you hang for another segment? We'll talk Alabama,
sure.
Georgia. All right. Mick Gillespie is our guest. Tell everybody where they can listen, find, and read you. Mick?
Yeah.
Mick, where can people listen and find you? No.
Sorry. I lost you there for a second. Bama Tailgate on YouTube, and I do the show with Jay Coker on Roll Tide Pods, Elephant in the Room, twice a week.
And you'll hang on for a break?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Back in a minute on Big Noon Sports.
Is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as Roll Tide as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Lots of sunshine this afternoon. The high today 57, mostly fair tonight, the low 32. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. Rain moving in tomorrow night, the high 61. Friday, cloudy with occasional rain, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 58 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Lars has the day off. It's Matt and Kerry Clark, and our guest is Mick Gillespie. Mick, let's break down Alabama and Georgia. I get the distinct feeling that you're leaning on picking the Alabama Crimson Tide. I find it interesting that the line opened around 4, and now it's up to 6. But lines are lines, and they're designed for the betting. They're not designed for the fans. It's designed to get everybody to bet one way or the other. So that being said, where does Alabama have a distinct advantage in this football game?
Well, crazy enough. I mean, who would have thought at the beginning of the season that we would have a distinct advantage at quarterback? But Jalen Milroe's kind of, you know, through the learning process, and he's not perfect, but he's shown us that he's explosive, that he's a game changer, that he's a leader, and that he's ready for this opportunity. I think that's the first one. And it's his ability to run that's going to hurt Georgia. I mean, that was Kirby's Achilles heel, and a lot of teams, honestly, have a tough time stopping the mobile quarterback. Well, he's like Derrick Henry at that quarterback. So once he gets outside of the pocket, you know, he can run over you, or he can run around you, or he can run, you know, past you. It doesn't matter, you know. So I think that's an advantage that Alabama has. And I think Alabama's secondary is better. And when they put pressure on the quarterback, I think that's going to help. And then the other thing to me that's a distinct advantage is that Georgia hasn't played a tough game. Their schedule worked out where they really didn't have, you know, they didn't really have a lot of nail biters. The last time they played a game where they could have gotten beaten was Ohio State last year. And the last team to beat them is Alabama. I think when you have a long winning streak like this, it starts to weigh on you. You're due to lose. And I think that their streak ends on Saturday.
Well, you know, they could have lost to Georgia this year. They had to come back in the fourth quarter. And I'm only bringing that up. Yes. Georgia could have lost to Auburn. Right. And the person that led that comeback, Brock Bowers, I think will play Saturday. I just think he'll play. And so Alabama's got to figure out a way to defense him. And the name that keeps popping in my head, and Mick, you can certainly disagree with this, but I'm wondering what Caleb Downs can do guarding him.
Yeah, you're not the first person to mention that to me. Bowers is, look, he's the best tight end I've seen in college. Better than Pitts. And I'm trying to think, like, who else would you even put on that? I've never seen a college tight end play like Travis Kelce, but that's what he does. So he'd have a size and a weight advantage over Downs, but Downs is a lockdown defender. And maybe the fact that also, you know, I don't think Bowers is 100% healthy. You know, that could be a way to defense him. You know, nobody's really figured it out. But what's crazy, and I got to give this to Jay Coker, because he said it, and he said to me on a podcast yesterday, he's like, well, you know, you got to figure that Georgia's going to look at what Auburn did to figure out how to stop Alabama. And I'm like, nah, they're going to do what they do. But then I started thinking about it. I'm like, both teams are looking at those games because they did such a good job of game planning, both of those. And I'm sure both teams are looking and going, you know what? What did Auburn do that worked against Georgia? What did Auburn do that worked against Alabama? So, you know, that could be a way to try to slow them down. You got to worry about McConkey, who, you know, those guys didn't really play many games together because one got hurt and then the other got hurt. But, I don't know enough about drawing up and scheming defenses to know. I think it comes down to this, though. It comes down to Alabama's ability to pressure the quarterback, which is something that when they've played their best football this year, they've done, and then force throws where they can make plays in the secondary.
I worry about if you put kind of Caleb Downs on Bowers and kind of leave that in a game into itself. I worry about what that does to the rest of the defense, because Caleb Downs, what a remarkable freshman. What a remarkable player. He's so integral to Alabama's defense when not matching up one-on-one as far as run support, for one thing. So that's just a statement about that. I don't recall a freshman in the secondary for Alabama. Maybe Marlon Humphreys,
Minka.
But you know,
Minka.
Yeah, it'd be Minka.
Yeah, Minka.
Especially with the
IQ, because the guys just play the game so smart.
Remember Minka was making all those plays? Like, who is this guy? You know, and I want to say it was Arkansas where he made the play that, you know, would might have lost to those guys if he had made a big play. You know, he's the last one that I can remember. And that's pretty high praise right there.
Well, coming out of high school, that was the comparison. They were saying this guy's the next Minka. So pretty strong praise, and the kids lived up to it.
Hey, Mick, this is not the front seven defensively for Georgia that we've seen in the past, is it?
No, I mean, look, this isn't we're going to lose our entire defense to the NFL like they had last time we played them, but they're good. You know, they're just not as highly rated, but they get after the quarterback. I mean, Bama's offensive line is going to have to block, and they're going to be in the backfield. They're going to make their plays. It's a Kirby defense. I mean, you know, the toughest thing for Pete Golding is that he had to replace Kirby, you know, and he just, he, it's tough to do, you know. Kevin Steele's done a great job, but it's, there's only a few guys that are that on that level, you know, and so the Georgia's a blueprint of what Alabama was, and it's getting back to it again, by the way. You know, so they don't necessarily have to have seven NFL guys up front and in the linebacker slot to be successful. They're just good players.
Mick, Matt knows I'm a foodie, so I can't resist asking this question. What was the best Thanksgiving side dish at Floribama?
Bushwhacker. It's got to be a bush
side dish.
I know.
We did have some bushwhackers. You know, I'll be honest with you guys. I'm going to tell you this right now. I was very selective on what side dishes I picked, just because, you know, I don't know who made them all, you know. So the best that I had was a corn casserole that I thought was just amazing.
I would have had to seek out a green bean casserole myself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, there was a whole whole table full of them. Like, however you like those.
I would have had a bite of each.
Yeah, you would have loved it.
You know, Lars said he had never had a green bean casserole until he moved down here.
Really?
I bet he said
the corn casserole, though.
Yeah, he made it because I went to his house for Thanksgiving. He made something called corn pudding.
They all about some corn in Nebraska.
They all about some corn.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Maybe this was a corn pudding. I don't know, but it was really good, the corn thing I had. But, yeah, I love green bean casserole. Sweet potato casserole is one of my favorites, but – honestly, dressing with cranberry sauce is like my number one, right next to my turkey.
I can't eat it without cranberry, Mick. Some people do, and I'm like, how do you do that?
I can't eat it with it.
That's a combo deal.
Yeah. I know a lot of people like that. I'm just not a cranberry guy, but, you know, Thanksgiving is for all palates, is it not?
Indeed.
All right. Just going down and returning to what needs to happen. Can you just kind of look at it and tell me what the best case scenario, if Alabama were to beat Georgia, what's the best case scenario for Alabama to make the playoffs?
If you want to be comfortable going into Sunday, have Florida State lose to Louisville. Or obviously, or Texas lose. I think one of those two happen. You're in good shape.
Which one's more likely?
Well, I think Louisville, even though they lost to Kentucky last week, is gonna have a good game against Florida State. I think just Florida State just looks like they're ready to lose. And I don't know. You know, the other thing is officiating matters. You know, I think we've seen that over the last few years. It depends on what kind of officiating that Big 12 championship game has. Because could Oklahoma State, got a little help, maybe really give Texas a hard time in their last ever Big 12 game? Maybe. You know, so, I mean, these are all games that would take a pretty big upset to have happen. But I think those two, I would probably say if I was ranking it, Florida State 1 and then Texas 2 would probably be the guy. Because I don't know about the other games. I mean, Iowa has zero chance of winning. Zero. And that also shows you that the Big Ten's not any good. And then it doesn't matter who wins. Well, I guess you'd rather have Oregon win just to kind of muck things up with one-loss teams. But that'd be the first decent win they have all year. But it doesn't seem to matter to this committee. They're in love with Oregon for some reason.
Bo Nix.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, but he's the marquee flash. He's the Phil Knight love wannabe. I mean, he's, and by the way, he'll probably win the Heisman, and I think I'd vote for him.
He's got a great shot.
Yep.
Yeah, I like him. I mean, he was on, I used to listen to him on another show. He was coming on with his NIL deal, and a lot of the NILs, you know, the kids come on and they don't really want to say anything. And, you know, us being like radio guys, I mean, we want to hear – not just that you come on, but say something. Give me something. Hey, he'd come on every week and bring it. His last year at Auburn. And I honestly appreciated that. And that made me a fan of his. So, you know, I'd love to see him win the Heisman.
Very well could happen.
I think it's going to, unless he just absolutely has a right.
Well, I think Penix is the guy to beat, but Bo is right there with him.
So whoever wins that game might win the Heisman.
That is exactly how I think it's going to shake out, Matt.
Yeah, I think so, too. Hey, Mick, we'll let you get back to the floor of Bama or parts thereabouts. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it very much.
Hey, we'll talk to you guys next time, and hopefully everything works out for Bama this weekend. I'm biased. Roll Tide.
Yeah, I think we all are. but I also think that we think with some logic. All right, Mick, thanks a lot. Kerry Clark is in for Lars Anderson, and we'll be back and address a couple of other issues. There's still some food left on our plate here for lunch. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Alabama, Georgia.
10-5, touchdown, Alabama.
It's the SEC Championship live from Atlanta, Georgia.
Let's get out of here again.
Cheer on the Tide this Saturday as the Crimson Tide look to get revenge on the Bulldogs. Our coverage starts at noon from Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia, on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner, too.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Kerry Clark has joined us on Big Noon Sports. Lars has the day off. This just came down about an hour ago, Kerry, of great interest. The Alabama Sports Hall of Fame announced its newest class just about an hour ago.
Let's hear it.
David Palmer.
Well-deserved.
Mike Anderson. Larry Chapman and John Drew from basketball. Robert Mathis and Mike Washington from football. Penny Hochschild Buxton from gymnastics. Boy, I remember her.
I do too. Right, I was her PA announcer, Matt.
You were?
Yeah.
Her personal PA announcer?
No, the whole team. Pre-Tony Giles.
Tony's made himself a legend at that role. And Scott Sullivan from baseball. So there they are. And I'm not sure on how they're voted in and at what time and the time period, but it seems like Palmer would have been a no-brainer from the minute of his eligibility, and maybe that's the case now. I don't know, but this is a good conversation. I don't remember a player, and I'm going to throw Bo in there and Herschel, that absolutely electrified a crowd when he was on the field, especially when he was back in punt formation or he lined up in a wildcat. David Palmer could stop, cut on a dime, and give you 9 cents change. He was just that kind of special player and certainly a Hall of Famer. Do you have thoughts on him?
I do. He's one of the favorite players that I've had in Alabama football history to watch. You're certainly correct about when he was back on punts. And people were accused of sitting on their hands. They didn't sit on their hands when David Palmer went back to catch a punt. They stood in unison because they knew that anything could happen. He could be going to the house any given punt return. And I once had an Auburn fan bet me, Matt, that he was going to lose his eligibility over some kind of grade scandal or something. I think it was actually to do with someone allegedly taking his SAT form. And this guy was just convinced that Auburn had all this proof and they were going to turn it in. And David Palmer would never play another down for Alabama. Well, that guy is $50 poorer for running his mouth.
You know, this was back in the day when he was at Jackson Olin. He was a Mustang. And he was playing at Fair Park. You remember the old field over there by the racetrack?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see if I can get this in order.
Cut on a dime and give you 5 cents change.
Yeah. He received the opening kickoff and darn near returned it. Then he lined up at quarterback and completed a pass. Then he lined it up in the slot and caught a pass. And then they scored and he kicked the extra point. Then they turn around and kick off and he kicks off. And then he makes the tackle. He could play anywhere, anytime at the high school level. Now, obviously, he wasn't a kicker at Alabama. But one of the other memories I have is Alabama and Miami. Were you there at the Sugar Bowl?
Yes.
Alabama, I think Miami got the ball to start, and Alabama just had them confused from the get-go, and it was 3 and out.
That's right.
And Palmer caught a punt around Alabama's 35, and he didn't go all the way, but he returned it pretty deep in Miami territory. And Alabama ended up getting a field goal out of it, and it was game on.
The tone was set.
Yeah.
You know the two plays that I remember the most from him at Alabama, Matt? They both occurred on the same end of Legion Field.
I know what you're talking about.
And one of them was in 1991. And one of them was in 1993. The first one was against Auburn. The second one was against Tennessee. In both instances, the opposing defense knew he was lined up at quarterback and was going to run the ball. And in both instances, they couldn't stop it. One of them helped produce an Alabama win in the Iron Bowl. One of them helped produce the closest thing I've ever seen to a tie being a win for Alabama when they came back to tie Tennessee.
They drove down inside the 10. Barker was removed. They put in Palmer. Tie game.
Yeah.
After Alabama scored.
Incredible to watch those two plays. And then who can forget the 93 Ole Miss game in Oxford when David literally did everything. Played quarterback, played wide receiver, ran back kicks, ran back punts. And Brian Bergdorf got hurt in that game. Jay was already hurt. And David had to finish the game at quarterback, and he led a victory in Oxford against a fairly decent Ole Miss team. It was just – and you can see all this on YouTube. Yeah, there's David Palmer highlight tapes galore on YouTube. And I would encourage any Alabama fan or just college football fan that haven't seen those to go back and watch them. He was only about a 4.6 in the 40, about a 4.60. But like I said – he could cut on a dime and give you change, and he had what they call football speed. And that's the reason he lasted 6 years in the NFL with the Vikings. It was primarily as a punt returner and kickoff returner, some wide receiver, but mainly a returner. But it was that ability to cut on a dime and give you 5 cents change that made David Palmer the player that he was, Matt.
He sure was fun.
And you mentioned John Drew. Let me just throw in this little fun fact. I used to lay in my bed, Matt, in Montgomery, Alabama, growing up as a child, and listened to Skip Carey call Atlanta Hawks games with an 18 and 19-year-old John Drew, who was one of the first players ever. He was one of the first four or five guys ever to bypass college and play in the NBA. And I didn't even know you could do that until the Hawks got John Drew. And that name brings back a lot of good memories as well.
Well, that's pretty cool. I remember him because, man, he could throw it in a swinging thimble. Terrific player to watch. And, you know, Mike Anderson, I traveled. I did every single one of his games at UAB. Heck of a coach. You know, people don't really remember back to his days of playing high school. Can't remember if he played. I think he may have played at Inslee. I don't know. But he was a good player, not that good. Ended up at junior college. And guess who selected him in junior college?
Was it Nolan Richardson?
Oh, getting old. It was Nolan Richardson. It was indeed. And he loved Mike Anderson for his toughness and his ability to play defense.
Well, he employed him for a number of years, too. He employed him as a number of years, too.
Yeah. Hired him at Tulsa and then moved with him to Arkansas.
Right.
So
Mike had a great career.
Respect.
I don't even know what he's doing now.
He's waiting on like money from St. John's.
There was talk at one time, Matt. It never materialized. But there was talk at one time, 10, 12 years ago, that he might be a candidate for the Alabama job. But it never came through.
There was talk that he might go to Auburn, too, at one time.
Yes, there was. That's correct.
It was last year at UAB. But, he went on to Missouri and Arkansas. And I have the utmost respect for him as a player and a person. So I'm happy for him, and I'll tell him when we get off the show and tell him that. So, all right, here's an interesting story. I'm just kind of perusing the internet here. Deontay Wilder and Alabama's Dallas Turner are set to be investors in the United States sailing team. You want to read that again?
Go ahead, man.
Pretty cool. I didn't even know we had a sailing team.
Yeah, I understand that Dallas is actually...
I remember the days of Ted Turner.
I think Dallas is actually using his NIL money to make that investment. It's what I read.
I would think, yep. That's pretty interesting.
That's a story that Noah Haynes is dying to write right there about Dallas Turner investing in the U.S. sailing team.
Oh, definitely.
It needs to be on Tide109.com. But anyway,
I expect it by the end of the day.
Yeah, you'll probably get it. He rarely disappoints. But that is a very interesting story. And Deontay Wilder, by the way, Matt, is finally going to have another boxing match. He's going to take on Anthony Joshua over in Saudi Arabia, I guess it is, next month. But he's going to the Middle East to box. So Deontay's getting back in the ring again. And we'll have to wait and see if he can get another title shot. But word is, if he wins this one, he may be in line for another title shot.
I hope so. I've been around him a couple of times. And first of all,
great guy.
I guess the ring doesn't do his size justice. He is absolutely huge. What is he, 6'7"?
Oh, yeah. Listen, Matt.
He is a very large man.
Before he became a boxer, he used to play in PARA, Park and Recreation Authority for Tuscaloosa Rec League basketball.
I remember him well.
He was recruited by the TPD, the Tuscaloosa Police Department, to play with them. That was a smart recruit because he was a very good player at Central High School here. I tried to guard him at 6'4", and being as unathletic as I am, and him being legit 6'7". 90 seconds and 3 fouls later, we went back to zone.
Didn't end
well for me.
Man, I wouldn't take a charge from that guy if he paid me.
But imagine trying to block his shot, and you're basically looking at his belly button.
Yep. Well, hey, hats off to you for trying.
I did try.
Some people would probably go, hey, like wait I said, a minute. Oh, my knee. Oh, my knee.
3 fouls, 90 seconds. Yeah, go back to zone. Sure will.
Gary Clark is with us on Big Noon Sports. We'll wrap things up in just a minute.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Thursday. We will talk SEC championship game with J.C. Sherbert. Also in the second hour, Dad will pick his blue plate special. I know he's struggling where to go. Stay tuned.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Lots of sunshine this afternoon, the high today 57, mostly fair tonight, the low 32. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day, rain moving in tomorrow night, the high 61. Friday, cloudy with occasional rain, the high 65. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 59 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Kerry Clark sitting in for Lars Anderson. Lars will be back tomorrow. Got a couple of really good guests for you tomorrow. If I can promote tomorrow's Big Noon Sports from noon until 2. Hamp McCorder, the son of Boyd McCorder, the longtime and just like and lovable commissioner of the SEC. A lot of people don't remember him because he was in office 40, 45 years ago. But he's a big, big Georgia fan, and he doesn't mind talking about it, so that'll be fun. And then Terry Henley has seen Georgia and Alabama both play in person, so I thought we'd get the Hall of Famer in to participate in the show.
Alabama fans love to hear from Hee Haw Henley.
Yeah, because he knows how to aggravate him. He's also funny. You know, he's a very, very funny guy. Yeah,
you don't believe me? Ask him.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Hee Haw.
Humility. I'm not sure a lot of it was lost on Terry Henley, but
the pride of Oxford, Alabama.
Yep. He's
him and Rick Burgess.
That's true.
Two players for the Oxford Yellow Jackets of different eras. Jackets. I wonder if Terry played for Coach Burgess.
I think Terry was before him.
Okay. That would make sense.
I don't think by very much.
Hey, you know, Matt, getting back to our brief discussion we had on Deontay Wilder, I wanted to tell the story of me getting the 3 quick fouls, but I neglected to mention to you, and you may already know this, but our listeners may not, our mutual friend, Matt, Chris Walsh from Bama Central and Mizzou Central, when he was with the TNews, he was getting paid by the story. So he decided to get in the ring with Deontay Wilder, and he ended up in the hospital.
Well, Chris,
and he had on the head protection and all that, but Deontay still rocked him, and
he broke his jaw.
He told him not to take it easy, and he didn't. And I can assure you that Christopher Walsh will never ever do that again. But I thought I had it bad with the 3 quick fouls. No, Chris had it much worse than I did, Matt.
Wow. Well,
fun facts you learn when Kerry pinch hits.
Yeah, that's good stuff to know. But
you wouldn't.
I
got to
blame that. I got to blame that all on Chris Walsh.
Yeah, but he got the story.
It's a good to spar with him. Yeah,
he got the story.
He had to write it with his other hand, though. His broken arm, whatever.
Always good when the wife has great insurance.
No. Well, actually, I'm not sure Chris has ever told me that story.
Well, get him to one time. Next time you have him on the air as a guest, get him to tell you his Deontay Wilder, because he can tell it. I only heard it secondhand, but I remember reading it. I read every word he wrote about it, and then when I worked for him for 2 or 3 years over at Bama Central, we discussed it again one year at a Christmas party, and he tells it really well. So, yeah, remember that.
Wow.
I'm here to help.
Yeah. Those little words right there will get you into trouble. Don't take it easy on me. I've actually said that before. This is a quick story, pretty interesting one. Dale Earnhardt Jr. was still racing, and he was given rides around in one of the Monte Carlos that was off the lot. They rolled it straight out of one of the showroom floors, but it was one of the Monte Carlos that had big 8-cylinder and all this kind of stuff on it. And he was taking fans around the track at Talladega for rides. It was pretty cool. And I talked to the track beforehand, and they said, yeah, you can go. In fact, just wait and go last. So you remember Big Dave McDaniel, one of my favorite people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just I miss him terribly all the time. But so he and I were going to be the last pair, and he was giving the fans a thrill. You know, he'd go like 120 down into the bankings and stuff like that, and they all getting out just so happy and giddy. And so as we were taking off down pit road, Dave opened his big mouth and said, we're media members and work here at the track a lot, and so you don't really have to take it easy on us. Junior hit that pedal so hard, and that car had a lot of get up, and he took it straight up into turn one, which, by the way, if you've never gone up there, been on that track, when you go into turn one, it doesn't look like a turn and a curve. It looks like there's a concrete building in front of you. It is that steep and that imposing. But he took us straight up to the top between 1 and 2 and just scraped the rearview mirror sitting about 15 inches from me off the side of the car with such precision. He was in total control of the car and floored it around the entire track, rubbing the wall the whole time. And we got back finally down to pit row. You know, we had been clutching our seats and the door handles. And we got back down there and I said, "Wait, open your mouth, Big Dave."
So this was Dale Jr.?
This was Junior.
Okay.
And Junior was laughing his butt off the whole time around. And then when we shakily got out of the car, it was a whole lot of fun. But that's just one of those instances. You don't tell a professional athlete, driver, however you want to use the definition of the word. But
or boxer.
You just don't say that. And I don't care how if you're 6'4", Kerry Clark, and I'm not sure, I don't think you asked for it, but I'm pretty sure you didn't get out on the floor and say, "Bring it, Deontay."
No, but at the time I was trying to guard him. I had no idea he was going to end up being a heavyweight champion. He was just a very good and tall and athletic basketball player that I couldn't stop. It was only later on that I found out of his boxing prowess, and he actually – I had a chance one night to introduce him to my nephew, Jake Pratt, the Down syndrome spokesman from Vestavia. And he was so kind to Jake. And I'm just a big Deontay fan. And, of course, his manager, J.D., is a friend of mine as well, Tommy's brother.
Well, and to just kind of put a perfect circle around this, first time I met him was after he was champ. And he was, I believe he... If he weren't, he was either Grand Marshal or he waved the green flag. But he was one of the dignitaries that I introduced in pre-race leading up to the Talladega race. And I was, after we got the race underway, I was over at this compound called the White Flag Club. We go over there and eat, and then I go back and start doing all my business, the stuff that I do over there. And I looked over there in the chow line, and there's a guy with this big leopard skin fur looking coat on. And of course I had to look up, and he was just, you know, getting his food like everybody else, being humble, you know, not calling attention to himself.
He's a really nice guy.
Really nice guy to power, you know, to have such a powerful punch.
And he's one of the reasons that we call this place Title Town, Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Well, I hope he gets it back. How old is he now, Kerry?
He's mid-30s. I don't know the exact number, but mid-30s.
Well, you wouldn't think boxing is a sport that you could have longevity in, but I guess...
You stay in shape. Look at George Foreman, man.
Yeah. Didn't he win it at 50 or something?
Did you see that movie?
What? A Foreman movie?
Yeah, that came out last year. You should see that.
Really. What's the name of it? Do you recall?
Big George or something like that.
And he's such a colorful guy.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He'll sell you a grill, too.
Hey, I had one. I loved it.
Yep. They were nice. Are nice.
Now I'm just I'm waiting on my air fryer. Do you have one of those?
Yeah, but it don't ever get used. But, yeah, it's looks good there in the pantry.
We travel down the same roads often, Kerry. Hey, thanks. I appreciate you filling in today.
It was very fun. Thank you for asking.
Hey, what's going on this weekend? Can you tell everybody what we'll be doing?
We're going to be doing, well, Ryan's going to do his 2-6 show from Atlanta Friday. And then we'll have pre and post from there. You actually will be at Walk-Ons with Audio Bob, but Mark McGriff and myself will be at a sports bar across the street from Mercedes Stadium. It's called Hudson Grill, and we'll be on what they call clean feed on our phones. And we will be having a Bama postgame show, win or lose.
Let's hope it's a celebration at Hudson Grill. Thank you, Kerry, and thank you to Noah Haynes. And you folks have a wonderful Wednesday.
A psoriasis flu.